6:30 with Jeremy Scahill at the Chicago Temple building on West Washington Street. Then on Wednesday in Madison, Wisconsin at the Barrymore Theater. To Toronto, Canada, Thursday and Friday. Then on to Saturday in Troy, New York at the Sanctuary for Independent Media. On Sunday in New York and on Monday at the Philadelphia Free Library. You can check our website at democracynow.org as we continue our 100-city tour. Oh, Democracy Now! Is hiring for our Video News Production Fellowship and our internship program. Get more information at our website. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Dennis Moynihan, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for...
Come on, Jamie. Let's go to the store.
Ma'am?
What happened? Where is my daughter? Jamie?
I'm okay, Mommy.
It's a good thing you folks were wearing your safety belts.
Injury will kill 150,000 Americans in 1995. Don't become a statistic. Buckle up. This message brought to you by your partners in emergency care, University Hospital at Stony Brook.
Woo, woo, woo! Hey, this is Dr. Demento. You never know what the you're going to hear next on WUSB, and that's the way I like it.
Hay lugares en la tierra donde hileras de montañas escarpadas esconden sus nevados picos en el azul celeste, donde el verde profundo de los bosques se renueva en riachuelos deshelados, donde la tierra se une con el tiempo, tan lejos como puedas ver. Esta visión es ofrecida a usted por la Asociación Americana de Optometría. Por favor, hágase un examen anual del preciado regalo de su vista.
Was thinking just that very same thing. It is 6:01 at WUSB Stony Brook. It is Tuesday night, and that means at this time it's time for Off the Wall. yes. Welcome, everyone. This is Off the Wall. I'm Kyle, and I'm joined by Emmanuel over there.
Hey, what's up? How you doing? Why do I sound so echoey?
I don't know why you sound so echoey. You don't sound too echoey to me.
I sound like I'm in a bathroom.
I'm not sure about how the listeners are hearing you, but I'll try to turn you up. But we're here, and this is, another interesting week.
Yeah, Kentucky and Oregon today.
That's right.
They pledge their allegiance.
It's a slightly super Tuesday.
No, not really. There's nothing super about today, I don't think. Boy, you know, it is getting interesting. It's the whole political process in this country is getting interesting. Well, it's been interesting for a while, but as it draws to a culmination, I think we're starting to see what people are really made of.
Yeah, and boy, all kinds of things. It's you don't want to know what's in this recipe of calamity. Well, I don't know. There's a lot of ingredients, so to speak.
It's funny because when did the Trump machine come into this place? That was a while ago, wasn't it?
Gosh.
Was that over the summer or something?
It was moved in. It wasn't certified for another couple months. It took quite a while for our engineers to get time and get the right instructions.
But we've been focusing on the press fixation and how they keep building this monster up, and it continues. It's not stopping. They're going to go all the way to the end with this thing, and maybe even beyond that. I can't even imagine. I've been having a little game where I turn on CNN.
Okay.
And I hold my breath, assuming Anthony Bourdain isn't on, or Fareed Zakaria, or any of the other people that aren't fixated on Donald Trump.
Right.
Assuming they're doing quote-unquote real news. I turn it on, hold my breath, and wait for the word Trump to be said. And usually it's the second or third word.
It doesn't take long at all.
Does not take long.
No,
Try it yourself. Don't turn us off, but you can probably turn on a TV at the same time.
Yeah, at your leisure.
And just, if they're doing news, they don't have a commercial, just see how long it takes for Wolf Blitzer or whoever to just mention the word Trump. It'll happen. It'll happen so quickly. You'll be amazed. To sound like that idiot myself, you'll be dazzled by this whole thing, how quickly that word is uttered. But I did something else. I did something else this week, which I'm a little bit ashamed of, but I'm kind of also intrigued by. I followed Donald Trump on Twitter. And the reason I did that, the reason I did that was because I keep hearing about his tweets,
uh-huh.
And I kind of like to hear them when they come out. Like, you know, if I'm out somewhere and not watching media, I want to see the stupid things he says as he says them. And I had no idea he said so many stupid things. And I don't know how he has the time. It's obviously him because it's... Well, I guess he could have a bunch of minions talking just like him, but it sure sounds like him.
It seems like it would either be you or not. It would be very hard to get some sort of system where you both are sharing on one account and not sounding totally different. I mean, I feel like that would be a lot of a process and production to get in place to share it and come off as the same person at all. I don't know. I've never run a Twitter account for someone.
Yeah. And this is something I do think he's capable of.
Right.
Like, not much more than that. He tweets a lot. He really does. He's probably going to tweet during the show at some point. I'm going to read you some highlights. But let me just say, of all the people I follow, and I follow a variety of different people, this is the most childish person I am following right now. The ignorance level, the stupidity of the things he says,
huh.
The rude way in which he says them, it far surpasses anybody else that I follow on Twitter. Just hands down. And I guess I shouldn't be surprised by that, but you would think somebody who has managed somehow to get to this point in history where he is... at the very least, number two in line to be the next president.
Right.
You'd think someone like that would be a little bit more presidential. But, you know, in a way, he's kind of tearing that whole office apart. I sort of like that part of it, that the rules don't apply anymore. That's always what I've been kind of seeking.
I'm curious what we're going to think of president. We're going to think of presidential after he's president, if, you know, because he's upending the rule book on it, right?
I don't know if we'll have the office anymore. I don't know.
Yeah, what happens?
Seriously, he gets briefings now from security advice. They're telling him things that somebody like that should never be told about, because he has power. He can do horrible things, and he will do horrible things.
Really have heard a lot about this, being presidential, more presidential. Can he be presidential?
No, he can't. He can't be president. I mean, if you have, you know, a dog or a cat, they are better suited for the job. I'm serious, because they are more naturally prone to humanity than this guy is. They will do the right thing. He will not. That's as simple as I can possibly say it.
Wow. So those are coming in fast and
I can't think of a single pet I've had that I would not trust in the Oval Office more than I would trust Donald Trump. I really
me either.
And they'd make better decisions too.
So you're getting the raw, unfiltered, what we believe is Donald Trump himself.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, he basically speaks in 140 characters or less, so that's his field.
Okay, because I know you hang out, you follow smart people like the I don't know, science community, all kinds of smart individuals.
I try to. I don't have a lot of time to read the details of everyone's life, so you miss a lot.
It becomes a job in and of itself.
I don't
yeah.
want it to be clogged up with all kinds of celebrity, you know, nonsense. Don't need that. I don't want that. Mm. And the funny thing is that Twitter's always pushing that on me. Hey, you should subscribe to Justin Bieber's Twitter. Why would I do that? Have I ever expressed any interest in that? Why is Twitter pushing all these people that, that alone is a waste of my time? And following them would be a huge waste of time. So, no.
So okay, so no doubt you caught wind that in the 90s,
mm-hmm.
Donald Trump posed
to say the word,
under other... Yeah, I know. It's kind of... Ugh.
Yeah.
Yuck.
He's visibly wincing every time he says the word. It's going to be a tough 4 years.
Posed as his own PR... person. That was the big
to do. That was the big story over the weekend,
yeah,
that Donald Trump supposedly posed as his own spokesperson. You know,
and denied it.
John Miller.
Yep.
This is the best we can do. I mean, I don't think that's a big deal at all. But then again, you know, I come from a hacker background where we pose as different people all the time. There's so much more, for God's sake. This is nothing. And if anything, this will ingratiate himself with more people that think, he's putting one over on the media, you know, that liberal media that can never get anything right. And here they are proving it again.
And there was actually some speculation that it was actually distributed by him to specifically throw the media into this echo chamber.
I mean, you think he self-promotes much? Yeah, obviously he's doing that himself. Obviously he's speaking for himself. Shouldn't be a big surprise. I guess the fact that he's lying about it now is something worthy of mention. But come on, look at the policies. Look at the racism. Look at the fascism. There's so much there to work with. Let's not be timid about this. All right. Let's not shy away from confronting the actual issues. Anyway, I don't want to dwell too much on this. So let me just read a couple of the tweets so you get an idea of what I'm dealing with. The real story that came out over the weekend was the story about Donald Trump and women and how basically it's a bit of a war there. But he had some comments to say about the New York Times because he claims that they made the whole thing up. And, you judge for yourself based on the things he said, the way he's acted, what's true and what's not. He said Roanne Brewer, the most prominently depicted woman in the failing New York Times story, yesterday joined Fox and Friends. That was one tweet. The failing New York Times. See, that's what he likes to do. He likes to attach adjectives to to entities to make it seem like they're doing terribly. Nobody reads this.
Disparaging, yeah. Discredit and disparage and downplay anything but him.
Everything but from the National Review to the New York Times. To CNN, he'll basically tear it down if it doesn't say what he wants them to say.
Oh, and even if they do, they'll say that they're horrible, horrible people because they're journalists.
And imagine what somebody like that with even more power would do to such media organizations. Think Berlusconi with a lot more power. It really is scary.
Oh, come on. This last year, the last 2 years, around the world, the place of journalists is just, it gets so degraded and disparaged and is, I mean, journalists are really an endangered species to a degree, if you really look at it globally. So, I mean, I can't help but think that, you know, plenty of them would realize that, you know, he's a pretty awful person for being just simply who he is. So there's no love lost there, right?
Anyway, continuing, the failing New York Times is greatly embarrassed by the totally dishonest story they did on my relationship with women. That's another tweet. Here's another one. No wonder the New York Times is failing. Who can believe what they write after the false, malicious, and libelous story they did on me? Another tweet. Over 50 women were interviewed by the New York Times, yet they only wrote about 6. That's because there were so many positive statements. You know, he is so fixated on the people who criticize him, he can't stop talking about it. He can't stop sending these messages out. It obviously really, really bothers him so much. If I ever get bothered enough to tweet out something negative, I maybe do one message. I'm done. I move on to there's more to deal with. But to fixate on one over and over again, it means you're not getting anything else done. It's sticking in your craw, as they say, and it's a very childish way to deal with criticism. It doesn't end here either. The writer of the now proven false story in the New York Times, Michael Barbera, who was interviewed on CBS this morning, was unable to respond. I don't know what he's referring to. And then he moves on. In politics and in life, ignorance is not a virtue. This is a primary reason that President Obama is the worst president in U.S. history. Then he goes back to the women issue. I gave a woman named Barbers Rez. He spelled it barber, as in the person who cuts your hair, with an apostrophe S.
That may be Barbara.
You know what? He sent a second tweet out afterwards. This is why I subscribe, because he probably deleted that first one, and now I have it right in front of me. But, he didn't even check what he wrote. Barbara Rez. A top construction job. Actually, he rewrote the tweet. Let me just analyze this a little bit. The first tweet, I gave a woman named Barbers Rez a top construction job when such a thing was unheard of, and the break of a lifetime, now she is nasty, ! Then he sent that again a couple of minutes later. Actually, it took him 7 minutes to realize he needed to rewrite that. I gave a woman named Barbara Rez a top New York construction job, added New York, when that was unheard of, instead of when such a thing was unheard of. And now she is nasty. He deleted and the break of a lifetime. And then he added the phrase, so much for a nice thank you. So you can get inside his head by seeing how he edits his little sentences that he sends out, what he thinks should be deleted and how he could phrase that better.
It's so funny. It's such a limited way to express yourself, but it's one of his vast tool chest or palette that he can draw from to direct his ire. But, yeah, you're right. The machinations, the gears turning, so to speak, what that's all about.
Now you sound like you're in a bathroom.
Whoa.
Yeah, how'd you do that?
That's a cool effect.
It's the magic of the USB board here.
I have to lean a certain way on the board.
Yeah, keep holding it up.
Wow.
Okay, so I'm going to finish this, but there's another please. Barbara Rez tweet here. What Barbara Rez does not say is that she would call my company endlessly and for years trying to get back into my company. That's just so grammatically wrong. That alone should disqualify you from running for the presidency. Let me read that again. What Barbara Rez does not say is that she would call my company endlessly and for years trying to get back into my company.
That's not saying much either. I've called back places that I've lost jobs.
Just,
you know,
it's a sloppy sentence.
Yeah,
it's really sloppy.
So what?
Say the word company. You're focusing on the actual meaning. I'm focusing on the syntax.
You're right.
And there's another part that I said no, he said at the end. And then he sent that same tweet out again 8 minutes later. So he doesn't know how to use Twitter, or he doesn't think his tweets are going through. So I'm having fun looking at this as it happens, but not taking any of it seriously because it's really silly. But what you should take seriously is the fact that this guy could win.
I'm glad you made a new friend on Twitter.
Oh, he didn't follow me back.
Oh.
If anything, I expect to be banned. You know, that's my goal, actually, is to get banned somehow from following him.
So there is this impending doom or reality check now. I think everyone is sort of like, wow, you know, he could win. What really does that mean? That you're hearing a lot of that, too, sort of despair and...
I guess people are weary of the campaign. It's a long process. It takes a couple of years. You got to follow it. I mean, the quicker you can get off NPR, like kick that habit in the campaign season, the better off you are. I mean, definitely. I kicked that like years and years and years ago. Well, I mean, I dabble a little bit because I like local radio, and sometimes it has NPR stuff.
What does NPR have to do with Trump?
Well, I mean, I'm talking about it becoming that like weary point, and I think, you know, had you been listening to a lot of that coverage as well as like the mainstream media, I think you would be especially weary in this sort of now general point in the election.
Mm-hmm.
But we're in it for the long haul. We're going to continue to listen and I don't know, give hope more of a chance.
Well, the thing is, I see people saying, yeah, he could become president. I have to say it myself. But I think if he does, it's the fault of the opposition more than it's the fault of his supporters. Because oftentimes I see this where people kind of fantasize about the worst possible thing happening.
Right.
And then sort of subconsciously make that happen so that they have more to complain about. You know, and I really fault the left in this country so much because they don't stand up enough and fight the actual enemy. They fight themselves so much more than they fight the actual enemy. Look at what's going on in this country now. Look at what Obama is doing with just the transgender stuff alone. And look at the reaction that's getting. Now, in case you missed it, this is from Saturday.
Okay.
Actually, Friday this has happened. The Obama administration's issued a directive on the use of school bathrooms by transgender students. And the real story here is the torrent of criticism that has provoked.
Right.
All kinds of right-wing politicians, not just North Carolina, but throughout the country, are fighting back. Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick accused the Obama administration of blackmail.
Right.
And called the directive social engineering. I've got to tell you, I'm familiar with social engineering. It's a totally different animal. Families in America will not accept it. You know, it's incredible to me, and there's a whole lot. There's a whole lot of people criticizing this and declaring war and saying that grown men are going to go into bathrooms with your young daughters.
All the little girls.
Okay, first of all, just to, you know, to speak to that concern right now, you know what? They can do that now. It's called a crime to do something like that and to victimize people regardless. This is something a whole lot different. It's apples and oranges, what we're talking about here. We're talking about people who have identified as transgender, who have either transitioned or are transitioning. This is not a football player deciding, hey, I'm going to go into the girls' locker room or girls' bathroom because I feel like it. No, it's about somebody who has gone through a whole lot to get to a particular point in their life where they say, I identify as a female. This is who I am. And this has been going on for quite some time. It's nothing new. It's nothing new. The only thing that's different is that it's being addressed officially by the highest office in the land. I think that's great. Now, we need to be backing this up. And once again, we're not seeing enough of that. We're seeing all the people who want to bring things back to the 1800s, we're seeing them prevail in the media. We're seeing Obama being touted as this out-of-control monarch who is basically interpreting the Constitution in his own way. No, this is the right way it should be interpreted, and this is something that is long overdue. We have changed as a country. This shows, this is just one instance of how we have changed. And if we don't back that up, if we don't fight back against the ignorant people who say things like this, yeah, you're gonna see more Trumps. You're gonna see more moving to the right and more reversing policies, and then yeah, we'll have plenty to complain about. That's for sure. But I don't think it's a world we want to live in.
Yeah, certainly. No, I'm with you on all of those points. You hear a lot of commentary like White House overreach, like overreach, as though Obama doing his job is, you know, setting a tone for the country is something we should be concerned about. I mean, it sort of boggles my mind, but this is an especially important juncture for fracturing. This is where
the each side sort of fractures because of the sort of nominee situation and the sort of unification of parties now to come against one another, Republican and Democrat. That binary is surfacing from the ooze. Anyway, so we're hopefully not going to be too divisive, and we can work together. And as you say, like support the tone, setting a standard, and being a lot more empathetic to other kinds of people, and what public facilities should accommodate in our country, and just not getting bogged down. And
well, it's just we keep giving so much attention to ignorance, and making these portrayals somewhat legitimate. The portrayal of grown men going into bathrooms with young daughters and things like that, that's just designed to make people panic. And there have been no instances of any transgender people doing anything untoward in a bathroom over the years where this has happened. And this has happened. This has been happening for a long time because it's not a big deal. It's being made a big deal now because people hate Obama so much. They want to push back. They want more and, more conservative values to be reestablished because they see them dying. And yes, they are dying. We are changing as a nation. We need to embrace that change. We need to recognize that change and push for more change instead of simply turning on ourselves and not recognizing when there's a real threat. And believe me, there is a real threat.
Yeah, a profound amount of ignorance that is a threat. Yeah, I mean, that's what it's playing on, is a lack of an understanding of what that means. I've seen people throw around a lot of different words, and the understanding of gender and who ought to have access and so on is like you said, made to make people really freak out.
Mm-hmm.
and confounding different sort of parables, stories that are really, there's no evidence for it, and that's supposed to somehow be an interpretation of what this is, this sort of guideline from the executive branch is about.
You see, you don't need evidence when you can just panic people. You don't need to actually present evidence. Just make people afraid. Here's an example.
Right.
I don't know if you heard about this guy on the Southwest flight back in December. Basically, this was a flight from Chicago to Albuquerque.
Okay.
And this guy was upset because there was a woman seated in front of him, a few rows in front of him, who was wearing a religious headscarf known as a hijab.
A hijab.
Which this guy, Gil Parker Payne, recognized as a Muslim practice. He stood up, walked down the aisle, and stopped next to her seat. And looking down at her, he instructed her to remove the covering. "Take it off. This is America," he said. And when she didn't do it herself, he did. He grabbed the hijab from the back and pulled it off. And that is the kind of reality that we live in this country, where people do things like that. Now, fortunately, this guy was charged with a crime, because it is a crime to do something like that. But this kind of thing, you know, whenever you hear about something like that, you get the feeling that there are all these people saying, "Yeah, one for the good guys, one for America," and that is so not what we are, not anymore. And we need to make sure that is understood.
Yeah.
This is the kind of thing, this is the kind of behavior. I'll bet this guy is a Trump supporter. You will see more of that. We will see more of that if we don't fight this type of thing and prevent it from taking hold. And, you know, I've been seeing in the media over the past week how the Republicans are starting to get in line with Trump as a candidate.
They're kissing the ring.
They're starting to do that because they hate Hillary so much. And that to me is very revealing as to who these people really are. Think about that. If they are willing to embrace that over an ideology that is a bit too progressive for them, was going in a direction they don't really like, they'd rather embrace fascism, they're fascist too then. All right? They need to go just as much. Here's an example from my favorite local politician, who I'm sure...
Oh, this is the king?
This is anything but a king. I've referred to this guy as an idiot, a moron,
King Dick.
A blight on the landscape. Yeah, he's a real jerk. And unfortunately, he's from Long Island. And every time something in foreign relations is brought up on the media, they talk to him because he's on that committee, or he's ahead of that committee, or something. And yeah, you better believe he's a Trump supporter as well. So he was on Face the Nation this Sunday. He's catching heat for using an ethnic slur to describe the Japanese during an interview on MSNBC on Friday morning, and then refusing to apologize for it.
Okay.
He defends his use of a racial slur. This is according to his Democratic opponent, Suffolk County Presiding Officer Duane Gregory of Amityville. He defends his use of a racial slur, tossing it off as a mere satire used to critique Trump's incoherent national security stance, yet he stands by his endorsement. Yeah, it's kind of weird.
So he was criticizing him, he used the word, and he stands by that word, even though that word isn't...
He's kind of criticizing Trump, but he's endorsing Trump. But he's mocking what somebody else who might support Trump would say, and then refusing to apologize for saying that. I'm going to say what he said, all right? I'm sorry if that offends anybody.
Okay, go ahead.
Basically, hang on, let me find the exact quote. Yeah, okay, here we go. National defense and homeland security are issues that mean the most to me, and there's real issues with him, real problems with his views. He's, of course, talking about Donald Trump. I don't know if he's thought them through, or it's just like the guy at the end of the bar that says, oh, screw them, bomb them, kill them, pull out, bring them home. You know, why pay for the Japs? Why pay for the Koreans? Now, Jap is a derogatory, racist term. We all know this.
Yeah.
And, yeah, he's quoting a guy that doesn't exist at the end of a bar saying racist things. Okay? But how far do you go with that? You know, you can quote people saying all kinds of horrible things and then say, well, yeah, I didn't mean it. I'm just quoting the guy who says these horrible things.
A hypothetical guy.
Uh-huh, hypothetical guy.
At the end of the bar.
And,
yeah.
You know...
Well, I mean, that word was used, and I mean, I remember seeing it on old Life or Time magazine covers from, like, the 1940s.
Yeah, they were pretty racist back then.
Not the 1940s.
I'll tell you what, Peter King. if you really believe that this is a legitimate expression, go into a bar and use the N-word, okay? And say, oh, I'm just quoting a guy. You know, I don't really mean it. You know, you can say anything you want if you're just quoting a guy.
Right.
That's the danger. Because I'm not this kind of person, but there's lots of people who are like this. It's a veiled way of gaining acceptance in that community. And
it's
horrible behavior.
Yeah, it's the I'm not racist, but my friend, I got this funny story about my racist friend.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And that, like, yeah, that little, like, subtle check that is used. It's a really, really slight. You know, when you're hearing it from somebody. But, yeah, no, that's so obvious.
He says, I stand by the merits of what I said. I was quoting the guy at the end of the bar who needlessly offends, who makes snap decisions and doesn't care. I was using it to make a point, and I would make it again. If someone wants to say the Mick at the end of the bar, I wouldn't be offended by it. Okay, you know, you wouldn't be offended by it because you just did this. But I'm pretty sure others would be offended if it was used in the context that you used it. And like I said, there are plenty of ethnic slurs to test this out with, plenty of other insensitive things you can say. I would say you should know better, but I know you don't. So it's this is exactly what I'm talking about. This is the kind of mentality that comes out from under the woodwork when you legitimize things like this. This is the danger that we're facing.
And then it gets run around as something where, like, his speech is being impeded upon in some way.
That's freedom of speech.
I was just trying to speak my mind, and yeah.
This is America. Pull off someone's hijab or
pull off
call
their
somebody
hijab.
A Jap or keep somebody from using a bathroom. This is America 2016, and this is what we have to look forward to if we don't fight back. I'm really getting kind of annoyed by this, the fact that we're not fighting back nearly strongly enough.
Yeah. Yeah, that's messed up. I've interacted with lots of women wearing hijab, and it's always been a pleasant experience.
Yeah, always. And,
and I would never
need to do that more.
I would never touch somebody else's outfit. Like, anybody's
unless
outfit.
Unless it was on fire or something,
right?
Yeah.
Unless they, like, had something on them that was endangering them, and they didn't realize it and wouldn't realize it in time to be, like, stung by an awful insect of some sort. I don't know. But here we are, and let's stop it, because this is not what we are about.
No. I'm really proud of the things that we have accomplished over the past few years, because this country has grown. You know, we've become so much more not only tolerant but embracing of different lifestyles, I guess, and backgrounds. There's just so much that we're learning, and in many ways, it's slow. It's a lot slower than I want it to be, but we are moving in a direction. And the last thing we need is to move in the other direction and to have all this ignorance take over, all this intolerance, all this hatred, all this fear. There's no shortage of it. And if you accept it as legitimate, then it gets even more power. We can never accept this as legitimate. Look at how many times in other lands it has been accepted, and it's led to all kinds of horrors. We are not immune from that. Yeah, we may be America. We may be the new world, you know, but we're not immune from all the mistakes that humanity has made. And we're taking some pretty big steps in that direction if we don't do something about it.
Yeah, and we can't lose sight of our own failings in the development of this country and our own every single, like day, every minute. We have to realize our history and be a part of changing society and creating the kind of community I think befits us.
Yes.
Wow. We could go on and on with that. That's, yeah.
I do want to go to a Trump rally, though.
Oh, I'm so afraid. I'll go, though. No, I will go with you. I will go. We have to have a plan. And we must prepare and bring the appropriate equipment. I don't know.
I don't know what the appropriate equipment is.
I'm not wearing a T-shirt, I'll tell you that. I'm not wearing any kind of paraphernalia. So
no, just don't wear the wrong T-shirt. But, you know, it's important.
Maybe I should get one with all the fighter jets and, like, the American flag and an eagle or something.
We've been to a Benghazi hearing with Hillary Clinton. We've been to a Bernie Sanders rally in Seattle.
That's true.
So we have not been to any kind of Trump event. And, well, you know what? There's a bunch of nincompoops who actually demonstrate on the side of the road every Saturday morning in Setauket. They're pro-war. I've never understood these people. It started with a bunch of anti-war people. Not a bunch, even. Just a handful. And they're all, like, over 60. And they stood on the side of the road. And that prompted this other group of people, I think most of them were also over 60, to be pro-war and pro-everything that they were against. It was pathetic on both sides, because there should have been 1,000 people demonstrating against the war. And these pro-war people, I don't understand them at all. Pro-Bush, pro-war, pro-hatred, pro-everything you could possibly imagine, and, of course, pro-Trump.
But no taxes.
Every Saturday morning at the corner of Route 25A in Bennett's Road, you can see them. Saturday morning? And that's the rare times I'm up on Saturday morning. I noticed that. And it's been happening ever since the George W. Bush years.
Yes, yeah, yeah. But we always swerve in oncoming traffic when we to avoid them.
Well, yeah, the last time
you definitely swerved around.
I don't recommend this, but traffic allowed it. So I was going down the road and I saw them on the right hand side, and I just sort of swerved over as far away from them as I could to make a statement that I didn't want to be anywhere near them. And I think the point was received.
They were very confused. And they noticed.
But don't do that if it's oncoming traffic.
That's not
safe. Hey, there's a story that's kind of interesting. It's really got nothing to do with what we're talking about.
Sure.
It's a sad story, really. It's a tragic story. I don't know how these things keep happening, but, these ocean liners, these trips people go on, they're constantly falling off. People are constantly falling into the ocean. And I don't know why this was never a problem before, but it seems to be happening with regularity now. This story, I just want to read you the story just to demonstrate another issue. This happened on Saturday. Coast Guard rescue units continued Saturday to search the Gulf of Mexico for a woman who fell off a Carnival cruise ship early Friday morning. The agency has dispatched HC-144 Ocean Sentry aircraft from Mobile, Alabama, to scour the waters 200 miles off the coast of Galveston, Texas, according to a Coast Guard statement. The Carnival Liberty passenger Samantha Broberg, 33 years old, of Arlington, Texas, apparently fell off the ship at 2 a.m. Friday. Carnival Cruises issued a statement confirming that video footage captured the image of someone falling overboard. An extensive roll call of passengers Friday revealed that Broberg was no longer on board. The search started midday Friday when those traveling with Broberg reported her missing. Carnival Liberty Broberg's family continued to hold out hope for her rescue. In a statement that appeared in the Fort Worth Star-Telegram's website, the family said it was shocked and deeply saddened by the incident that occurred on the Carnival cruise ship. We hope and pray the U.S. Coast Guard is able to able to bring Samantha home. The Carnival ship left Galveston Thursday for a planned four-day trip to Mexico. According to the Pollock Report, which writes about thoroughbred horse racing.
What?
Broberg, I'm reading a story here. Broberg is the wife of thoroughbred horse trainer Carl Broberg, who was not aboard the ship. The report said the couple has four children.
Uh-huh.
ThoroughbredDailyNews.com also reported the same news about the couple. An ESPN article in December noted that Broberg had the most wins of any trainer in the nation. As of December 23rd, he had 418 wins on the year and was well on his way to wrapping up his second straight title as the top trainer in the nation in terms of wins. He has said his goal is to increase his 2016 win total to at least 500, ESPN's Bill Finley wrote. Do you see what happened with that story there? I'm reading a story about this tragedy of this woman falling overboard, and it turns into a story about the husband and how he hopes to achieve 500 wins in his thoroughbred horse racing career.
Yeah, that was really...
What in God's name? That's not important. That's got nothing to do with the story. Yeah, she's married to some guy. Who she's married to has nothing to do with it. The story is about someone who fell overboard. And, yeah, you know, the man is always more important in these stories. I get it, USA Today, but wow. I've never gotten it quite hammered over my head like this.
And then it just ends.
That's the final word, that we hope this guy will bring his win total to at least 500. Never mind that she fell overboard. The story should never have deviated from that. But this is something you see far too often in the media. You just have to look for it a little bit, and you'll find it in the weirdest places. You know, if you have evidence of that, please send it to otw@2600.com. We'd like to see more examples.
Thoroughbred Daily
News. You won't have to look far. You won't have to look far at all.
No, it's weird. And, like, because citations, digital citations, and, like, including that as a source and some other virtual or web news site as a source, then that getting mixed in. And just the writing is clunky.
Yeah. Another story that came out last week that no one's talking about, I can't figure this one out.
Uh-huh.
Rumors started swirling last Tuesday that the news was coming. Residents of West Texas, the town is called West.
West?
I don't know if it's in the west part of Texas. I think it is. I hope they would finally learn what happened the night of April 17th, 2013. Do you remember this? When a deadly explosion at a fertilizer plant leveled their town.
I think I do, yeah.
The blast devastated the small town about 70 miles south of Dallas, destroying 500 homes and killing 15 people, including 12 first responders. Yeah, you know, and it was awfully close to Waco, Texas. It was awfully close to the anniversary of Waco burning. It was awfully close to the anniversary of Oklahoma City. It was awfully close to the anniversary of Columbine. It was awfully close to the anniversary of Hitler's birthday. You know, I could just go on and on with all these anniversaries. But what we said back in 2013, I found the show summary for our show of April 23rd. We talked about the massive explosion in Texas and wondered why the event was being glossed over, the significance of the date and location of this explosion.
Whoa.
There was all kinds of questioning that, you know, we put forward that was never addressed. And now, apparently, it's been revealed that it was deliberate. It wasn't an accident. It was deliberate. And even that's being glossed over. this was a terrorist attack in our country, a domestic terrorist attack. But because it wasn't Muslim in nature, it's not getting any attention whatsoever.
Right,
because
it was a what, like a white dude?
Well, we don't know. They're not even looking for somebody, apparently.
Or like some local biker gang. It was a biker gang. That's what it was.
Yeah, it's really weird. But the story that I saw on CNN about this has one of the people, one of the survivors, finishing the whole thing by saying, even if it was arson, part of the survivor still believes it was an accident. Even if someone set the fire, surely it was never the intention for it to spread like it did. What the hell kind of justification is that for something of this magnitude? To just say, oh, well, yeah, they set a fire, but they didn't mean for it to explode like that, so not really a terrorist act.
Yeah, that wouldn't be okay if it was like just a normal day at the plant.
No,
a gas plant, wasn't it?
When that happened, it was all kinds of wrong. It was obviously something huge had happened. It was obviously not an accident. Nobody reported it. Nobody cared. Nobody seemed to want to focus on the fact that, yeah, this was an act of domestic terrorism. Yeah. Now here we are, what was it, 3 years later, that we might finally be getting some aspect of the truth, and we still don't care. We still don't want to know more about it, and whoever did it is still out there someplace. But, yeah, you have a couple of people in Muslim attire do something in San Bernardino, and that's second only to 9/11.
Wow, we really need to keep track of these things, because that's wild. And I could just see people who are keeping track using that for some other ends in the government or elsewhere. I mean, that's pretty absurd, because it was really shallow, like shallowly covered. There, whatever else that was kind of, silly media or, Hollywood thing that was going on during the time, upstage that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird how we can only, guess, and we keep the investigations nice and quiet and all that, and then we're left years later coming back to it in even more diluted news cycle. I'm surprised you even caught that.
Well,
that's wild.
I'm aware of being manipulated. I'm aware when something happens that doesn't quite add up. That didn't quite add up. It was just covered up way too quickly, or just glossed over way too quickly. And that's, that gets me upset when I see that happen.
Yeah, and that's infrastructure. That's like a pretty dangerous kind of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it was accidental, you wouldn't want that kind of people working there. Like, you wouldn't want to have that kind of negligence at a refinery or a factory like that.
Or those kind of people walking around free that would do something like that in the first place.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You have a story over there? Or?
No. These are the other despicable stories that we were going through. This is crazy King and the hijab stories.
So, oh, yes, yes. Well,
I'm collecting all the really
so many despicable
ones.
Stories. We have some football updates, and this is important because tomorrow, Kyle, is the final for the Europa League.
I watched a little bit of Bayern.
You watched German Bundesliga. It has nothing to do with this, because no German team is represented.
It's okay, but I mean, they showed highlights from Wolfsburg and stuff. And I was just curious.
We have some updates on where we stood since last time. I believe we talked about how we were following Liverpool versus Manchester United, Liverpool prevailed. Against Manchester United.
Did they?
But you knew this. We watched the game. Yeah. And they
I'm
I know there's a lot of games.
I'm being excited for our audience. They're excited too. Please go on.
So Manchester United was eliminated, and Liverpool went on to play who did we play? We were following Liverpool after Manchester United. They played Borussia Dortmund. That was in Germany. And they prevailed there as well.
Yeah.
And that means that they made it to the semifinals. Liverpool was playing Villarreal from Spain, and we defeated them. Yeah, we defeated them, and so we make it to the final. Now we are playing Sevilla from Italy. Yeah, so that's our... Wait, is that from Italy? No, that's from Spain, I think.
Yeah, that's Spain.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Sevilla.
Yes, the Spanish team. So we're playing them tomorrow in the final. Interesting point, though. When Liverpool, we played Manchester United and defeated them. You heard what happened on Sunday.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, at Old
Trafford. Old Trafford, the stadium of Manchester United, was completely evacuated and the match was abandoned, but they're going to replay it. Their final Premier League game of the season, which, by the way, Leicester United won the Premier League, and that was incredible because they never won it before, apparently, in over 100 years.
Right.
But they evacuated the entire stadium because they found a suspicious package.
They're on high nerves anyway, right, with immigration and all this stuff in the UK. It doesn't surprise me that they had training equipment around and that people were, like, keeping their eyes out and raising alarm because it ended up being a fake
That's the
device.
Thing, yeah. It was a fake bomb. They said it was very realistic, but not a real bomb. And then it turned out that it belonged to the authorities, that they had left one behind.
They forgot about
one. How much faith do we have in the authorities if they're going to leave behind their fake bombs after they have these tests to keep everybody safe? You know, keep track of your damn fake bombs already.
Yes, normalize our stadium when you're through, please.
So many people are inconvenienced by that. People came from all over the world to see Manchester United, and they couldn't see them.
One single game, and it was ruined because of some ironic security training procedure that then causes an actual game to be... It's like the equivalent of, like, one of those CPR dummies being, like, left somewhere...
Yeah.
And someone running to their aid and, like, trying to help the CPR dummy and resuscitate
it. Even the local fire department knows how many CPR dummies they have. They know if one's missing. Believe me, they know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Don't try.
I know that from
don't
personal
try.
Experience.
No, they keep good track.
Uh-huh. Anyway, so the game is tomorrow. We're playing Sevilla. It's taking place in Basel, Switzerland. And it starts at 8:45 p.m. Central European time, which I believe is 2:45 p.m. our time. And it's broadcast on some channel in the United States, so you can watch that. And then
find the game.
Whoever wins that game goes on to Champions League next year, and we'll be following it through that season. One thing with Liverpool, and you follow Liverpool, it gets very emotional. All right, and right now we're following Liverpool. This all started last year, and we started following a 10th division team in England in the FA Cup,
and then
we went into the Europa League, and now we are with Liverpool going into the final.
They've got a song.
They've got a song, but they also have a tragedy. The Hillsborough disaster took place in 1989, where this massive crush of fans resulted in 96 fans dying. It was just found out. In fact, two games. One game was the anniversary, and it was very emotional against Manchester United, the anniversary of that. Actually, that might have been against Borussia Dortmund. The anniversary of that particular tragedy happening. But then after that, there was a finding by a court that the police were at fault for not having adequate crowd control.
They did not plan accordingly. They didn't have enough.
You'll see this big 96 in the stadium in Liverpool to remember the people who died, who never came home after that particular game, which is one of the risks of mass events like that. You have to be very, very careful. And then in addition to the tragedy, of course, yes, you also have the anthem of Liverpool, which is You'll Never Walk Alone. It's a show tune from the 1945 Rodgers and Hammerstein musical Carousel. And somehow it's sung at association football clubs all around the world. The tradition started at Liverpool in the early 1960s. And we're going to go out tonight with the Shirley Jones version of that song from the film Carousel, which came out sometime, I think, in the 60s or 50s or... whatnot. It's a classy way to leave, I think.
Wow. All right. Let's check it out.
All right.
WSB.FM.
Good night.